Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only, Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29, select styles only. In-store only, limit 5. Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only, Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29, select styles only. In-store only, limit 5.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you for joining me. And now I'm actually live on Blog Talk Radio. So I'm going to get to my review in just a minute, and I'm going to bring on a co-host momentarily as well. And thank you guys for joining me. This is the post-Royal Rumble show. And there are quite a few things that I want to get to. Very passionate stands that I want to take on a number of things, and that's including the Nia Jax just nonsense. There's no other word to put it, and really just no logic built into that at all. And I'll get to that momentarily as well. And obviously the No Way Jose, if you guys follow me on Twitter, by the way, at the WWE Podcast, you'll be able to check out my thoughts on that as well. And you know what, I tend to tweet out things that are, I guess, constructive criticisms. But in general, I do love the product, and I enjoyed the Royal Rumble as a whole. So, I tend to tweet out things that are a little bit controversial just to spark some conversation, but I do believe in everything I tweet out. I don't just do it just to do it. And so, anyway, guys, thank you for joining me. I am back on a live radio format, live blog format on Blog Talk Radio here. So you can check me out, and I'll be tweeting out the link to that in the coming days, kind of a new format here. I used to be on this format, and now I'm back, and I will be taking calls over the next few weeks. And I think it's a cool format to be able to bring people on and give their opinions on what's going on in WWE and be able to bring on the listeners. And so that's going to be returning. And the co-hosting format as well is something that I'm trying to do on a semi-regular basis. So if you haven't followed me before, this is a WWE podcast. I'm not affiliated with WWE, but I am a big, big fan of them, obviously. I'm just a fan doing this podcast for fans. And so I'm available really anywhere you have a podcast app. I mean, I don't need to list them all. If you got Apple, you got Google, you got anything else on any other platform that you have. So give me a check there. And also, I am on patreon.com/WWE podcast, where you can check me out there and get an ad-free experience, exclusive shows, shout out on the show. You can even come on the show. We can co-host the show. And there's a lot of cool perks there on patreon.com/WWE podcast. And for just a dollar, you can get all those cool things and get yourself in the game. And I do appreciate all of you who have done so. And the latest patron of the show, and that is Troy Blackstone. Nice, easy name for me to pronounce. Sometimes the names are a bit difficult. Very, very cool, easy name for me on that one as well. So thank you, Troy. It's a pleasure to have you on board, and I hope you enjoy the experience. A lot more is coming, as well as video reviews. So check on patreon.com. That will be exclusive to that show, to that feed, is the video reviews. So guys, thank you once again. I am very honored to have you here listening to this show. We are live as live can be on Blog Talk Radio. So again, this will be a format that is going to be continuing. And if it's successful, I will be doing this on a weekly basis where we can discuss as a community, WWE. This is a format and a platform that I want to be able to use for you guys to voice your opinions on a stage that is, I guess, it's a stage that we all share common ground on, and that is the WWE. And so thank you guys for giving me a listen. Please, if you have a moment, rate and review me on iTunes or anywhere else that you have the ability to rate and review me. So now, guys, before I bring on the co-host, just some overall thoughts on the Royal Rumble. I just some quick thoughts, and then we'll get to our co-host, who is on hold. And that is, the Royal Rumble was, as I said, I thought it was a very good show. I didn't think it was outstanding, but I thought it was a show that was very good on the wrestling end of it. Some of the storytelling was a bit questionable. I think the Shane McMahon win, Shane and Miz win, was a bit over the top. As you guys know, I'm not a big proponent of Shane McMahon just kind of jumping in every time that he feels the need to jump in and win a championship or headline WrestleMania for a 50-year-old man that is at best a part-time performer, and have him believe that we are supposed to, believe the fact that he can go toe-to-toe with all these world-class athletes. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous in my estimation. And I do have some thoughts on that as well. And we're going to get to all that. So without any further ado, because I'm going to continue to blabber on about this, the Royal Rumble, because, man, it was a marathon show. And there's so much to discuss. But while I do that, I want to bring on our co-host. And this is Ashley. If you guys listen to my show, she was on as a co-host, I think it was 3-4 weeks ago. And we had a great conversation. So you can check that out if you'd like to. And I think it's something that's worth listening to. And so without further ado, I'm going to bring on Ashley to the show and get her take on the Royal Rumble, and we'll see where things take us. So, Ashley, you are now on the show. What's going on?
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Loud and clear.
Awesome.
So before we get into the details, I kind of gave my quick overview of the Rumble. What were your thoughts as a whole for the show?
I think it was a pretty good show. It was pretty decent. I guess it was everything I was expecting it to be in some aspects. I guess I wasn't expecting it to be as long of a show as it was, but, you know, what can you do? But it was actually pretty good. You know, there's some minor complaints and things I just had, you know, questions on, but all in all, I would say maybe like a C+, maybe a B show. Maybe. What about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that boat too. I'm more of a probably B minus. Mm-hmm. As you just said, I mean, there were some things that I have questions on, scratching my head a bit and a bit towards the fact of WWE claiming that they are giving this fresh start, and I'm still seeing old habits. And, you know, so there were some things that, I really loved. And there were some things that I just, like Nia Jax, I know I'm having a lot of feedback on Twitter, a lot of backlash on it. With this Nia Jax just entering the Royal Rumble, and the fact that we had Becky Lynch enter herself in the Rumble, and you had Fit Finlay, who just decided that he can now just tell people that, yeah, go ahead. Some things like that, just the continuity of the storyline sometimes just are head scratching. You have to really, really suspend your disbelief. But so what would you say if you were to rank the top two matches of the night, what would those be?
Oh man. I think the Asuka Becky match was good. I was very surprised with Becky tapping out, which I'm sure we'll discuss in a little bit. Kind of mixed feelings on that. And I was pleasantly surprised with the men's Rumble match. AJ and Brian's match was okay. The crowd was just not into it at all, and I'm thinking maybe because they were so, like, emotionally drained from the Women's Royal Rumble match. I'm pretty sure that was right before it, but I felt bad for AJ and Daniel a little bit, just because, like, mechanically the match was good, but the crowd just wasn't into it. And I don't know if maybe it's because we've seen it so many times now or what, but I was kind of let down a little bit in that aspect. But if I had to guess, and Sasha Banks and Ronda Rousey had a pretty okay match. Again, there was maybe too many reversals and just, I don't know, like maybe it was too choreographed in a way, just like too planned in that aspect, but it wasn't terrible. But yeah, if I had to pick two, I would probably go the Men's Rumble and the Becky and Asuka match.
Yeah, I will second that on the Asuka Becky Lynch, and we can start there. Let's get a little more detail about that match. And as you just alluded to, and I was thinking this as well, like the reversals in that match was almost at a level of video game. I mean, they were all, I mean, let's not shake around the bush. They did a very good job. There wasn't too many botched spots. It looked like they practiced this over and over and over to the point of, as you just said, it looked almost over practiced. And that can be kind of a blessing and a curse. And so it was almost as if like, they had like the R2 button on the PlayStation, like on lock, like they just kept reversing. But to that extent, I think they have good chemistry. They put on a match that was very wrestling heavy. And what I mean by that is almost to like an amateur wrestling kind of way. And mm-hmm. instead of just punches and kicks, it was more of that chain wrestling that I enjoy myself. You don't see that too often. And the only, I think downside to that was this is Sasha Banks versus Ronda Rousey. And when Ronda Rousey came in, she was this just unstoppable badass from UFC that, you know, you looked at her and just, she, you know, you could believe that she would go toe to toe with many of the men and probably beat them. And she just, she seems to on an even playing field with a lot of the wrestlers. And I would like to see Ronda be more dominant rather than always being taken to her limits, just as Brock had to be taken to his limits with Finn Balor. I don't know why we always have to put people on level playing fields and we can't just have them have a dominant matchup. With that said, obviously I think it's the right outcome having Ronda Rousey beat Sasha Banks. I think that was the right move and really the only thing that WWE could have made. And that cool little nod and wink to the four horsewomen at the end of that match.
For sure, yeah. And I think, honestly, I think that match was designed just for that outcome after the match was to just remind everyone about the four horsewomen and, you know, how Ronda, that was always Ronda and her friends, like their thing, and how Becky, Sasha, Charlotte Flair, and, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank on the fourth. Oh, and Bayley, of course. They just established themselves in NXT in a very similar yet different fashion compared to Ronda and Shayna and all them. So I truly think the Ronda and Sasha match was just to maybe plant the seeds for the future feud between those eight women. Now, depending on when that's going to be is another story, you know, depending on what's going to happen with Ronda after WrestleMania, if she's really leaving or if she's going to stay for a while, you know, that's all hearsay at this point, depending on who you want to believe. But the match itself was good, and like you said, like a video game-esque type feel to it. But yeah, I think Ronda still at this point, especially like her first year, she should have just been, in my opinion, essentially like just demolishing the roster and just going through them. And at this point, maybe like if throughout the past however many months she's been there now, what, maybe 10 months, 12 months, maybe I think it's about a year now, just building up to it. So have squash matches and then building up to tougher opponents. And maybe if she had gone through squash matches or just been, if her matches had been more one-sided, maybe last night's match against Sasha could have been more competitive, but still not as back and forth as it was. Just because Ronda is a badass, you know, and Ronda did come from a legit UFC and MMA background. So she, if it was, you know, everyone knows if it was a legit one-on-one fight, Ronda would have crushed her like instantly. So I wish we kind of had that more of a feel in Ronda's matches right now, especially if the end all is going to be her versus Becky at WrestleMania. That should be one hell of a match. And I just feel like they've kind of lessened Ronda's appeal a little bit more than they may have needed to at this point.
Well, that's just it. And I think the danger of my argument, I guess I'm arguing against my own argument, is that now, and you heard it last night, is the fans are starting to turn on Ronda. And I mean, it wasn't that over the top. I mean, she's been, I think, over the last probably 2-3 months, the fans have started to, I guess, wear out. I guess the fans are viewing Ronda as wearing out her welcome. On top of the fact that she's competing regularly. I mean, she's competing in tag matches on Raw, singles matches on Raw. She doesn't feel as special as she did. And maybe that's because of overexposure. And I know they're trying to have a champion that's there on a weekly basis and not an absentee champion like Brock Lesnar. I get that. But I think that having Ronda there, she does have some awkward kinks in her promos, you know, the avocado toast, weird stuff. And she has her own little kind of just nuances that don't always connect with fans. But to be honest, as you just said, she's been there a year. I don't think there's anybody that could walk in there and outside of Kurt Angle, who picked it up faster than anybody who's ever picked it up, coming from amateur to professional, having Ronda translate all of her skills as quickly as she did from MMA to WWE is absolutely amazing. I mean, promos, it's going to take a while to really find your voice, and I get that. But I think her overexposure and the fact that she hasn't really connected with the fans yet, and now she's the champion, she's running roughshod in the women's division, I think the fans are starting to build a little resentment towards Ronda Rousey, and they're starting to say, hey, that was cool. She came in as the MMA badass. It was awesome to see her tap out Stephanie and raise hell on Raw and go against some heels we don't like. But now she's starting to compete with the rest of the roster. And eventually she's going to run out of heels to face. And she's going to have to translate into the babyface realm. And at that point, the fans are going to have to make the choice. Hey, are we going to side with this woman who's been here and has been a mainstay for years and we respect and watched grow in NXT and made it to WWE and we followed them along their journey? Or are we going to side with this star that made the transition into WWE and is now rumored to be taking a leave of absence after WrestleMania? So that is, I think, what's starting to leak into the fans' minds and why she's not getting such a big reaction on the babyface side that Vince would like to see. And the fact that now we have Becky Lynch, who is up next, who I believe will get, I think it'll be a 90% support for Becky and 10% for Ronda. I really believe it'll be a landslide heel and babyface reaction for Becky or a babyface reaction for Becky and a heel reaction for Ronda. I really believe the WrestleMania crowd is going to bury Ronda Rousey.
Oh, for sure. And that's exactly part of what I was just going to say. I think two things may have hurt Ronda. I think on her promo skills alone, she's never really been one to be like the best talker, even in her UFC days, but she never really had to, because that's not what the UFC was designed to do. Like, it's straight fighting. Yeah, you know, you have your people like Conor McGregor who are just naturally gifted in that area, but it's not promo heavy over there. So I feel like with her, she maybe a downside was just trying to base her promos and word them in a WWE light and script. I feel like maybe if she was able to just be more natural and go out there, maybe, like, of course, like, give her bullet points and just, but have her go out there and just naturally say what she's thinking and feeling, because there's some backstage interviews like that she'll do after the show or whatever that I can relate to. And I can believe that's how she truly feels, like the one she did last night after her match against Sasha. I'm not sure if you saw it, but it was like maybe a minute or two interview backstage. And it was just, she was just talking. She was just reacting to the match and her emotions and what it meant to her and just the fight itself. And I feel like if maybe there was more realism in what she's saying and less of WWE having her say exactly what they want her to say or what they think she should say, like certain words and things like that, I feel like if it was more natural for her, it would be easier. And then two, I don't think anyone expected Becky Lynch to rise as much as she has within the past few months. So I think that kind of backfired on Ronda, because I feel like if Becky hasn't become this megastar that she has and is still destined to become up until WrestleMania, I feel like Ronda would have more support on her side. But like you said, now that we have a Becky Lynch, and who is a believable badass in her own right, and like you said, she came up from NXT. She came up from the bottom and worked her way up, and we saw her journey. That's what we weren't able to see with Ronda, which isn't necessarily her fault. It's just that it's your average person can relate more to Becky than they can to Ronda at this point. So I think that's what's going to hurt Ronda at WrestleMania. So I'm definitely interested to see the crowd reaction, and I'll be there. I'm so stoked to be my first one. And I was always gung-ho, Ronda, like I couldn't wait, you know, to go and cheer Ronda. But now I'm more so leaning towards Becky because I just, you know, it's that feel-good moment again. And just to have however many years it's been for Becky just to pay off at WrestleMania to get her moment, I just feel like that's going to be just, it's worthwhile for Becky, and I think it's really going to hurt Ronda. And honestly, I think if Ronda does take time off of WrestleMania, it could be for the best, you know, have her, you know, disappear for a few months, whatever she's going to do, you know, that's her business, that's fine. But that could be probably the best outcome for everyone involved, and maybe come back like Survivor Series time or SummerSlam, depending on, you know, what she has going on outside of WWE. But I feel like after WrestleMania, it could be the best for both individuals in that aspect.
And you just touched on something, and I touched on this on a show earlier this week, that I think that if Ronda does take time off, and I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world, I actually think if WWE is trying to keep her a fan favorite, that taking time off would be the best possible thing that could happen for her Ronda's career, because the turn is it's happening as we speak. And we saw the results of that from the crowd reaction last night. And, you know, there was 40,000 people. I would say it was probably 70-30 against Ronda. I mean, it was very obvious of the path that fans are on, and it's just going to continue to WrestleMania. And so if she takes time off, I think that absence will make the heart grow fonder for the WWE fans. And because beyond WrestleMania, I really don't think there's anything left for Ronda to do at this point. And if she takes from April till November off this coming year, I think that would be the best thing that they could do for her fan favorite character. Now, with that said, I still believe that Ronda will be, I think, an even more successful heel than she is a babyface because of that, just that mentality and that star power that she brought from the UFC. She can use that to get the fans to think that she's an entitled and unstoppable force in the women's division. So you could really have her play off of that. And she's, you know, say, hey, look around. I've beaten everyone there is to beat here. There's nobody left. And so she's eventually going to run through all the heels that are on the roster, and she's going to have to turn heel herself to find fresh competition.
Oh, for sure. And it kind of reminds me of back, I think it was right after WrestleMania 19, after Rock beat Stone Cold in their final match of their little trilogy that they had going on at WrestleMania. And he kind of came out and he's like, you know, I beat everyone. There's no one else to beat. And then next thing you know, I believe it was Goldberg who came and that started their feud. So not saying that Ronda, you know, is on their level or anything like that, but I feel like you can kind of take that same aspect, have her take some time off. That would be the main difference between those two scenarios, of course, but have her take some time off and then have her come back. And then just depending on who the hot babyface is, if it's still Becky, come back and just be this dominant badass heel, say I can't, you know, I beat everyone. And then if you want to go the four horsewoman route, you can do that. I just feel like when Ronda first came in, you absolutely had to have her as the babyface and have her have this year to get the experience and to get the feeling and the transition into the wrestling world, which she's done remarkably well. Like I had high hopes for her, but I never expected her to pick it up this quickly. And I believe you said like a Kurt Angle, like it's just amazing how quickly she was able to pick it up. So I think time off for her is the best option after WrestleMania. Cause then too, like you said, it'll make us appreciate her more when she comes back, no matter what role she comes back in, babyface or heel. I just feel like we'll be down to cheer for her. Or we'll be down to boo her even more so at that point. But we need that time to miss her. You know.
Yes, and I think because I know she wants to start a family, and hey, I'm all for that. That's cool. I mean, I just think that not only that, which is obviously very important for her personal life, but the other kind of side effect is what we just talked about, is that time away will give us time to miss her. And I just really think that there is a really awesome heel run coming from Ronda, and I'm excited for it whenever it happens, whether it's the end of this year, whenever she returns, if she returns. I mean, this is still all speculation that she takes off time after WrestleMania, but somewhere in that mind and in that body of hers is a nasty, awesome heel run. And I'm just excited for it. So, the Asuka and Becky Lynch match, I mean, I loved it. The only thing I have, and I'm trying to convince myself and talk myself into the fact that it's okay that Becky tapped out to Asuka. I'm having a hard time with the tap out. I don't mind that Becky lost, because I don't think that having her win the championship there would have made any sense. And the path to Ronda would have been much more difficult from a booking perspective to have champion versus champion, but the titles aren't on the line unless you're doing a unification match. It would just been difficult. But and I'll just ask you first before I really give my piece on it is, what did you think of the tap outs of Becky Lynch?
Honestly, when it first happened, I was shocked. When she was in the submission hold, I was thinking either one of two things was about to happen, because my prediction was Asuka was going to win from the beginning. But I was leaning more towards a disqualification victory, maybe have like Charlotte come out and cost Becky, so Becky's pissed off and like finds a way to enter the Royal Rumble later on, especially when I saw that their match was the first on the card for like the actual show. I was like, okay, so this is a pretty good sign that Becky will somehow end up in the Rumble later on. Never thought that was going to lead to her tapping out. When it first happened, I was, like I said, shocked and very disappointed in a way, because she didn't need to tap out. Maybe long-term story-wise, it's not going to hurt her. And maybe come Tuesday, everyone will just forget that it happened because she won the Rumble and that moment was awesome and she, you know, deserved the win, all that good stuff. But I just feel like even if you try to overlook it, it still will – you're still going to know. Like, if you go back and watch the Rumble, you're still going to see that Becky tapped out, and she's not the champion right now because she tapped out. So I just feel like the build for her character, maybe you should have just taken, like, a disqualification, because WWE is famous for finding outs to their matches, which I'm normally not a fan of. You know, I feel like, especially one-on-one, you should have a definitive winner. But I think they kind of backed themselves into a corner in that aspect with that match, but I was expecting like a Charlotte or a Ronda or even like a Shayna Baszler to come out and just cost Becky the match and then be pissed off. And then, like I said, find her way into the Rumble later on. So the tap out, I'm not a fan of at all, but now I guess WWE just wants us to maybe not necessarily forget it, but just keep like, look at the bigger picture of what happened, that Becky won the Rumble and that they didn't do us like they did Daniel Bryan however many years ago and then not even have him in the Rumble at all, which is what they could have done with Becky. But again, not a fan of the tap out. So I'm hoping, as weird as it is to say, we can maybe ignore it in a way, which is hard to do. But yeah, man, I'm just not a fan of that. I feel like they could have done something differently besides having her tap out. Like, even pass out, like, I know it's so cliche since everyone compares her to Austin, you know, how he passed out against Brett, but something to that effect. But I just feel like that kind of like took her down like maybe a peg or two.
I have no problem with the fact that she lost, but you have Becky Lynch, who, not even any question about it, was the most over and surprising star of 2018. And a woman, nonetheless, who was the talk of the industry for the first time maybe ever, is in the modern era of professional wrestling, and you're having her build this path, this war path to Ronda Rousey, who was the queen and just dominated the MMA, whether it's men or women's division, with the talk of MMA. And you're building these two to a head at WrestleMania, and you have her tap out to Asuka, which, look, Asuka is one of the most talented performers in the WWE. I have nothing against Asuka. I know that they're also trying to legitimize Asuka and make sure that she looks strong and is not just a fluke champion and get some steam behind her too. But I'm sorry, she should be secondary to Becky Lynch right now, because Becky Lynch and the reaction and momentum that she has gotten over the last few months, surprisingly since SummerSlam when she turned on Charlotte, is not something that comes along very often, maybe once every 5 to 10 years. That's how rare that this is, and much less a woman, which makes it even more awesome and more rare. And you have this happen, and you have her on the road to WrestleMania, not just lose by pinfall, which I would have accepted a little bit more, but lose to a tap out, which now makes her look vulnerable to Ronda Rousey, who uses the armbar for a submission maneuver. It took her down at least two pegs for me. And I did not like it. If I was booking this, I would have had Becky just go off the rails and just start beating the holy hell out of Asuka, getting disqualified, leaving Asuka just in this pile of a heap of just mess, and having Ron or Becky just standing there staring at her like this badass. Maybe Asuka was about to win the match. I don't know, whatever. But having Becky look very strong, not tap out, and also having Asuka look like she was about to win the match and Becky just loses it and hits her with a chair or whatever. And as you just said, maybe they could have done some other shenanigans. I don't like DQ finishes, but in this case, it makes sense. And the tap out would have probably been the last option I would have booked for this match. Was it a good match? Absolutely. I think it was a very good match from start to finish. Well, from start to almost finish. And that was the tap out. Why would you have Becky Lynch, the hottest female performer, the hottest wrestler in the world? I mean, you can make that argument at this time. Have her tap out on the official road to WrestleMania that we all know she's facing Ronda Rousey for, and Ronda has a submission maneuver. You need to keep them looking both unbeatable, so you have no idea what's going to happen. Neither one looks vulnerable. Something has to give. That's what they missed, and that's what really hurt the match for me.
Oh, for sure. And I feel like, just real quick about that finish, I feel like, to me, I kind of compare it, and maybe unfairly, to like a John Cena on a road to WrestleMania. There's no chance in hell we would have ever seen John Cena on his road to WrestleMania tap out to someone and then go on later on to win the Rumble and then everyone be okay with it. John Cena would have never tapped out. Like back in the day when John Cena was still gaining traction and becoming the star that he obviously became, I just feel like maybe, obviously Becky isn't on the level of John Cena yet, but I just feel like it was unnecessary. WWE has the luxury of booking their own finishes, so I just feel like the tap out was the worst case scenario they could have put Becky in, because it was just unnecessary, and especially against Asuka. If you want Becky to lose maybe against Ronda at Mania via submission, like if you have to have Becky tap out, then that's a whole other story. But I just feel like in the beginning of the road to WrestleMania, having her tap out does make her look weak, no matter what she did later on in the night. Yes, it was an awesome moment. I'm stoked she won, and I didn't screw everyone over by having her not enter and all that crap, but I just feel like the tap out totally could have been avoided. Totally.
Yeah, it was zero booking sense there. I know that if you talk to a writer or talk to Vince, he would say, well, we need to make it'd probably be twofold. Number one, we need to make Asuka look legitimate and like a legitimate opponent for most likely Charlotte Flair for their rematch at WrestleMania. I get that. But the other argument would be, well, maybe we want to see Becky have something that she has to overcome. But no. That's the thing is, Asuka is a one-hit wonder for Becky on this path to Ronda Rousey. And it shouldn't be Becky Lynch dominating Asuka, but it should be Asuka taking her to her limits and having this is all about Becky. I'm sorry. It's all about Becky right now.
Right.
And it's not at the expense of Asuka, who should not even be as over as she is based on the booking that she's suffered over the last number of months up until she won the women's championship. But it's all about Becky, and you really poured cold water on this Becky unbeatable, almost transformation that she made. You made her like, oh my, who the hell's going to beat? Nobody can beat her. She's dominant,
right.
And then you just have her lose to Asuka. It just didn't make sense. And now the good thing is that we have, 2.5 months until WrestleMania. There's a lot they can do to reignite her persona and make her look more like a badass. And they can do some really good promo videos and maybe her talking about how she tapped out and how it's now going to make her stronger and that she's going through additional training, maybe show her in the NXT Performance Center, doing some submission reversals and things like that. There's some things that they can do. So that's the shining light on this is, WrestleMania is still about 8 weeks away, and so there's time to repair it. But man, they really hit a roadblock, no pun intended, last night, and I was just I was shocked. So I guess the one thing was, you know, anytime you're shocked in wrestling, it's cool. But when you realize what that shock is, if it's good or bad, then you really step back and go, was that really worth the surprise finish?
For sure, for sure. And like you said, I'm definitely a fan of the sports like feel to a build up for either a big game or a big match or anything like that. So I hope they do take that route and have Becky explain and kind of have like an in-depth look and like what she was going through mentally when she tapped out and afterwards and like maybe her journey to even later on last night to find a way to get back into the Rumble. I hope we see some type of documentary from the second she got backstage after tapping out to Asuka to all the way leading up to WrestleMania, like her training. I feel like that would be very beneficial. And then obviously Ronda is a badass training. So I just feel like if they really put time and effort into production of actual videos and just like a story package, because they're going to need it depending on when they bring Becky over to Raw. They're going to need that reinforcement just to show us and remind us how big of a deal this is. So I definitely hope they go that route.
Right. I think they will. I don't know who talked Vince into this was a good idea for a finish, but the only, as we just both said, is the only saving grace for this whole thing is there is a lot of time to repair this. Can they repair it fully to the point where I don't believe that Becky will tap out again? I don't know. At this point I would say no, but again, there's a lot that they can do creatively between now and WrestleMania to make me believe and to really restore Becky's kind of intangibles that she had and that magic that she had when she quote turned heel. WWE seems to have a problem successfully doing every time they turn someone heel, it seems as if they get that babyface reaction. Let's move on a little bit. I mean, I could talk about this women's division forever, but I do want to get to some other things. And so I know this is on the kickoff show, which is still amazing to me that the United States Championship was on the kickoff show. I don't know. I get that they're trying to get butts in seats before the actual event starts so that, you know, you have people interested in a match that is kind of a mid upper card in a kickoff spot. And so while I feel it's a bit disrespectful to the United States Championship, I guess why they were doing this. What did you think of Shinsuke Nakamura defeating Rusev to retain the United States Championship?
Oh man, honestly, I don't see the point in the hot potato back and forth of the title. I am not one for quick title reigns or just for like a shock value or anything like that, unless the buildup has been there, like an underdog story or something in that aspect. But I'm not a fan of going back and forth with champions and just passing the title back and forth. I don't see the purpose, because it's not like they've built up Shinsuke in the past few weeks to be this unstoppable force coming back after Rusev and everything. So I feel like I was expecting Rusev to win fully. I had him as my pick. I thought there was no way they were going to take it off of him. I thought it was going to be a decent match, but I just figured there was no way they were going to take it off of him so soon, especially on the kickoff show. I guess I was obviously wrong, but and I don't know if it's because of all the talk with AEW and all that stuff. Obviously, I don't know Shinsuke's contract or if he was even looking to leave or if it had anything to do with anything like that. If they're just trying to make Shinsuke happy or whatever. I don't feel like the title change was the right move. I feel like Rusev should have defended it successfully, and then if you wanted to continue that story, actually put some more meat into their story and then have them build up into the next pay-per-view and have them defend it again. And if you're that set on having Shinsuke win, then maybe change it like a month from now or something like that. But I just felt like for Rusev's sake too, he needed a successful title defend, and I just feel like they kind of blew it with that one.
Yeah, and when I said retain, I meant win. He won the championship. But I think that, this anytime they bounce back and forth, it just devalues the belt. It makes you go, who really cares? I mean, at this point, anytime they do that, and they do it a lot with like tag team, the tag team championship, especially on SmackDown. At this point, it's like, you know, you go, well, if it's New Day, if it's the Usos, I don't know. It's one of the teams. I mean, you just always, it's almost as if you don't care who holds the belt. And I don't want to feel that way. But in this case, I do. And Rusev, who I think had a hell of a lot of potential a few years ago with Lana being his business manager. You know, he was that Bulgarian brute, and he seemed unbeatable until John Cena beat him at WrestleMania a number of years ago. And ever since then, it's been a landslide. I don't know what they're doing here. I don't know. And the whole logic of Rusev getting mad at Shinsuke a few weeks ago for accidentally landing on his wife, which really wasn't, I mean, if you do the replay, I mean, I know the announcers are trying to sell it like he landed on her. He barely landed on her legs. I mean, it's not even close. And the fact that Rusev is the one that kicked him in the face. And so where do you think he's going to go? I mean, there was no logic behind it. So, and he's the babyface in the whole thing, which made it even more difficult to get behind him. And I think Rusev is a legitimately funny guy. I mean, his humor is well known throughout the business. He's likable. But I don't know what to feel. I feel like I should care about this program more than I do. And I think it's just simply bad booking. And that Shinsuke has, ever since winning the Rumble last year and losing to AJ Styles at WrestleMania, has just gone really almost nowhere. The same Asuka, jeez, when she won the Royal Rumble last year. It's like they gave the fans what they wanted, but when they got to the destination, they didn't get the prize. I mean, that's what Vince McMahon seemed to do last year. And now Shinsuke seems to be just treading water. If you watch the Royal Rumble, and we'll get to the men's Royal Rumble match, Shinsuke almost did nothing offensively and was eliminated almost without any fanfare. I mean, he lasted, I think, 20 minutes or so, but he was just kind of hiding in the corner, taking the bumps for the new guys that were coming in, and didn't seem to be doing a whole hell of a lot. So he's just being kind of hidden in the roster right now for a guy that, when you look at what he did in professional wrestling outside of WWE, it's almost criminal. I mean, it's crazy what they've done with some Shinsuke. And as you just said, maybe it's the AEW thing. I don't know. But to me, Shinsuke is kind of lost right now in this feud with Rusev. And I don't know. I don't have much more to say about this other than I feel like I should care about it more than I do. So let's move on here. The Cruiserweight Championship, this was also on the kickoff show, and that's Buddy Murphy defeating Hideo Itami, and Tozawa and Kalisto to retain the Cruiserweight Championship. So thoughts on this?
I think with the Cruiserweights, you're always going to expect to have a decent to good match. Like, well, I guess decent to very good match. They're always entertaining. I feel like they don't get the credit and the recognition they deserve. Honestly, being, you know, 100% honest with you, I don't watch 205 Live religiously or as much as I probably should with the talent that they have. But they definitely have picked up ground in the past, what, 6 or 7 months or so. It was a very good match. I expected Buddy Murphy to win just because storyline wise, I didn't see any of them being plausible enough to beat him. I thought maybe if anyone, maybe Hideo Itami. But Buddy Murphy, I am a big fan of his, and I just think he's amazing in the ring and what he can do, and he makes his opponent look that much better as well. So I think he's a very good champion, so I definitely expected him to retain, and I'm just excited to see maybe what they do with him going forward and what his next feud is going to be.
Yeah, I'm kind of echoing that again. I mean, the whole Buddy Murphy thing, I think he almost had to keep him as champion. The reason I say that is because the Cruiserweight division doesn't get a whole lot of love on the main roster, and that's unfortunate because, as you just said, you don't watch 205 Live much. I don't watch 205 Live much. I don't know a lot of people that just rave about 205 Live, and it's kind of a shame that these guys who are really just killing it out there are being overshadowed and not promoted enough by their own brand. And maybe they could just have a quick segment on Monday Night Raw. I mean, my God, 3 hours, you can't find just 10 minutes to do a recap video of some sort every week, not just occasionally. I'm saying like a mainstay. Here's what's going on in 205 Live. Have a professional narrator just describe the storylines that are going on instead of just the occasional, oh, it's you know, Buddy Murphy versus Hideo Itami in a grudge match on 205 Live, make sure you tune in. I mean, we need more than that. And so Buddy Murphy retaining here, I think, was the right move, because this was the most exposure. I know it's the kickoff show, but this is the most exposure that 205 Live has really had on the Royal Rumble, arguably the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, or third, depending on where you rank SummerSlam. And this was the stage to show off what they have and what potential viewers are missing for those that are not tuning into 205 Live. So I'm fine with it. I don't know how many people that are just emotionally invested in the outcome of this. I think Buddy Murphy was the right way to go, so that people go, wow, he's the champion. He retained. So, I mean, maybe I'll tune into 205 Live. I mean, maybe that's the logic WWE has. And so it's just, I think on a consistent basis, they need to start promoting 205 Live, you know, more often than not, because of the fact that I don't think many casual viewers tune in.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And it really is a shame.
It is. All right, so let's get to something that probably more people are going to be talking about, and that is Shane McMahon and The Miz defeating The Bar to win the tag team titles. And this was one of the predictions I didn't feel like this was a lock, but I felt that this one was – It almost had to happen because this team has just formed. And at first I didn't know if I was supposed to cheer for The Miz. He was kind of a quasi heel, but he was aligning with Shane, who I think should be a heel anyway, based on the ridiculousness that he's involved in on a monthly and yearly basis inside the ring. And you know, I also tweeted this out too. I said, hey, you know, Miz's dad was ringside and he was so proud of him, and the announcers were putting his dad over and saying that his dad is finally proud of him. So I said, well, okay, so the birth of his daughter, the fact he headlined WrestleMania, the fact that he made millions of dollars, he's an actual kind of movie star, and he's been in WWE for, what, over a decade, and he's held the WWE championship. And this guy, or his dad, none of that made him proud. None of it. It all just got swept under the rug. Son, I don't want to see you. I don't want to see your face until you win the tag team championships. I mean, really? I mean, moreover, I want you to win it with a guy that's not a regular performer, and maybe even a 50-year-old man that just very rarely competes in the ring. Once you do that, you have my stamp of approval, and you will be now no longer denounced as my son. I mean, it was ridiculous. The fact that, and the announcer's trying to put this over. I don't understand any of this. I do see as kind of a short term, well, maybe even long term prediction that one of them is turning on the other. Most likely The Miz is going to turn on Shane after they lose the tag team championships, and which might be before WrestleMania, setting up a Shane versus Miz match at WrestleMania. So, but overall, I thought it was an okay match. You have, you know, Shane, who, when he was standing on the top rope, and he always gives, you know, he does the cross like he's going to die, making sure that if he does indeed die, that he, you know, goes to wherever he believes he's going to go. And once he stood up there, I go, okay, he's not doing an elbow because he just did the sign of the cross. I said, I don't know what he's going to do, but whatever this is, it has a 50-50 chance of him breaking his neck. And he successfully landed that shooting star press. And I'm sure he was just a sigh of relief after he probably practiced that all week. But overall, I thought it was an okay match. I'd probably give it B- match overall. I just don't know what they're doing with Shane McMahon. Every time that they put him in the ring, they make him believe that he can go toe to toe with The Undertaker, for example, AJ Styles at WrestleMania. It angers me so much that we're supposed to believe this. But anyway, so what are your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, no, I'm 100% right there with you. I knew going into it, just if not no other reason, because it's Shane McMahon, but I knew with all the hype that they were giving Shane and Miz, and like you said, the newly formed tag team and all that, that they were going to win. It was in my thought, it's just a matter of time on when someone turns on someone and who is it going to be. And normally I would say The Miz, but I have this weird feeling that it may be Shane turning on Miz to lead to that magic at WrestleMania. Because, you know, of course, Shane has to have his big moment at WrestleMania, which still blows my mind. But, yeah, I'm 100% right there with you. I feel like it is going to be Shane turning on Miz, and we'll see. And I feel like, of course, we'll see Miz's dad ringside at some point. So if that plays a factor into the heel turn or whatever is to be seen, it wouldn't surprise me because they just love getting family involved and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's absurd that Shane is a tag team champion right now, but I guess we'll see. But yeah, I'm waiting to see how long it takes for one of them to turn on the other. But I mean, and not for nothing, it was a very good match for who was involved. And Shane did hit a nice shooting star press. I was pleasantly surprised in that aspect. So kudos to him. I don't know how long he practiced it or whatever, but and I know he's done it in the past, like years ago. But it did look pretty decent. So kudos to him for that.
It did, and what's crazy about it is Shane McMahon, a 50-year-old man who is almost never in the ring, and for the first time, at least, that I can remember I actually don't even know the last time that Shane McMahon attempted a shooting star press, and he landed it, and he landed it almost perfectly, and that you have Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 20 or 19 with Kurt Angle attempt the same thing and almost break his neck. Granted, at that point, I remember holding my breath at that time. I would say, I forget how old I might have been, 18, 19 years old, watching this pay-per-view with my friends, and we all just looked at each other like, he's dead. Like, I mean, we looked at it and we said, he's dead. And like the way he landed, granted that Kurt Angle was way further away from the ring than he probably should have been, which caused Brock Lesnar to land the way he did. But just the fact that Shane landed it and Brock didn't is kind of a weird comparison. However, you know, you have Shane McMahon out here, and I would love to see him as a heel. He has been a babyface since his return 3 years ago when that Vince Kennedy McMahon Award, whatever the hell that was, that ended up having Shane return. I believe it was in Boston. And so ever since that time, Shane has been a babyface. And then he consistently gets put in main events of WrestleMania and then wins the World Cup at the much loved, beloved Crown Jewel pay-per-view. And then, you know, you have all of these things. He inserts himself in Survivor Series matches and is consistently one of the last competitors in the match. And just over and over and over. And I love Shane McMahon, but I can't do this anymore. I need Shane as a heel. I think he's been a heel, I think, the majority of his career, you know, prior to him returning a few years ago. He was a great heel when he was with Vince back when, obviously, 20 years ago when Stone Cold and Vince were going at it. He was a great heel, and I think he could be still a good heel. So just to backtrack to all of this and circle back, Shane could very well be the one to turn heel here, and I would love to see it. I think that would be an awesome swerve to see Shane as heel rather than The Miz, who has been heel 99% of his career. So I'm looking forward to it if it happens. Do I think it will? I probably not.
Yep, right there with you.
So let's get to the Women's Royal Rumble, and obviously Becky wins to the almost the surprise of no one, but that's okay. I think, you know, WWE doesn't always have to be unpredictable just to be unpredictable, and wrestling fans love to say, oh, that was predictable. Well, why is it such a bad thing when things are predictable if it's what you want? It doesn't always have to be a surprise if it's the wrong outcome. I mean, just to be a surprise should not trump the right decision. And in this case, I think Becky Lynch was the right and only decision that I think WWE could have made, short of the fans burning down that stadium if that had not happened. So we had I think it was 70-plus minutes at this match. This felt like a marathon match. And I think it's because the end of the match just went on and on and on. I don't think it was a bad match. In fact, I think it was a great way to showcase their new talent that they have. And my God, do they have a lot of Asian and Japanese women that I think if you haven't watched NXT, have no idea who any of these women are, because I think they debuted about three different Asian women that, I mean, if you don't know NXT, you probably just say, I think it was one of them. I mean, they all seem to kind of blend together. And I don't mean that in any kind of racist way. It's just they seem to all debut at the same time, which, if you don't watch the NXT product, it's a little bit confusing. But overall, I think, look, Becky had to win. She did win. Fit Finley played, the role of general manager for 3 seconds and just let Becky walk out. And apparently that's how you can just enter the Royal Rumble, by the way. And by the way, there's no just official way to enter the Rumble. You just declare yourself in the Rumble. And if there's an injured superstar or if you take somebody out on the way to the ring, you can just instantly replace them. So that's just how it works. And if you're an agent backstage, you can play general manager and you can allow people to just go to the ring and no one says anything. They can clean this up so easily. Maybe it's just me being a fan for so long. I just look at this through the lens of like, can this be believable? Like, can they just clean this up, please? Just simple stuff. But Becky wins. It's the right move. And to me, the only move.
For sure. 100% there with you again. I feel like, honestly, going into it, I just knew, especially with what happened earlier in the night with Becky tapping out or just losing in general, I knew she was going to end up in the match, but I was kind of scared that they were going to pull the swerve just because they wanted to see that reaction and have Charlotte win. I just had like that pit in my stomach, like, oh no, they're going to try something screwy. They're going to cost Becky and just prolong this whole storyline. But I'm happy they didn't and gave us what the majority of us wanted in Becky winning. The whole concept of qualifying to, or not even qualifying, that's part of the problem, but even being eligible to enter the Royal Rumble, whether you beat up someone who can't even make it down to the ring, which kind of blows my mind too, because you mean to tell me that Lana walked by all the agents and trainers and Vince and Triple H and everyone back there limping by them, and they didn't notice that she couldn't compete until she was like walking down the ramp or the aisle, and then that's when they all came out and realized, oh, she's in horrible condition, she can't go out. Like, I just feel like that could have been like maybe like a backstage segment, like maybe throughout, like just have like a split screen and have Lana in the back like nursing her ankle injury from what happened earlier on, and just built that up throughout the match, and then had a surprise entrance and not have just Becky come out and just like beg Fit Finlay, like you said, of all people to enter the match. Nothing against Fit and what he's done for the women's division over the past however many years is remarkable, and he doesn't get nearly as much credit mainstream as he should, but I just feel like if that was the route they were going to go to get Becky into the match, they could have played it up from the beginning of the Rumble, because obviously at that point all the entrants have their numbers, they know when they're going to go out, they know where they're going to be called, so just play that up, just have split screens, have Lana in the back nursing it, trying to ice it down, whatever they're doing backstage, have her meet with trainers. And then don't show Becky until Lana's number came up. Maybe play Lana's music. Have maybe someone come out if you want them to, or just play her music, have it stop, and then hit Becky's music and have her come out to that huge ovation, not have her beg in the aisle just to Fit Finlay to come and enter the match. So I just feel like maybe that they could have done some tweaking on that. Me personally, that's maybe one of the routes that I would have gone, but yeah, like you said, just having the whole concept of the Rumble could be cleaned up so much, like with Zelina Vega just hiding under the ring. Yes, there's no official rule when you need to enter the match or if there's a time limit before you even can, once your music plays, and there's no time limit, whether it's a minute or 2 minutes that you have to enter. But I just feel like there's just so many little campy things in a way that they could clean up on just to make it more believable and just to give you, because I love Rumble, it's one of my favorite pay-per-views of the year, but just like little things like that, I was like, come on, you don't really need to do that. It's just kind of being extra in a way and just taking away from the believability aspect of it.
You just laid out some of it. I overlook so many sins by WWE because the Royal Rumble I love so much that there's mm-hmm. just so many just cardinal sins that they commit. I have to consciously say, look, I know that's not believable, but I just love the Rumble so much that I sit there and just meditate like, okay, no, that makes zero sense, but I love the Rumble. My love for the Rumble is so great that I overlook the fact that you can just walk out and enter the Rumble if an injured superstar is there. You can hide under the ring. There's no limit for when you can get in the ring after your music hits. So why the hell wouldn't everybody just hang out outside the ring and wait till there's only one person right. left? I mean, ridiculous stuff. And the fact, probably the worst, the biggest offense to me, as far as these just ridiculous things that they should just clean up. I mean, it's super simple, is the fact that after you're eliminated, you can just come back in, and if you throw somebody over the top rope, that's considered an elimination. I have no problem with if they, you eliminate somebody from the match and that individual, man or woman, gets so angry and they come back in and they start beating down the person that just eliminated them. Even that, I mean, I don't like, but if that happened, I would be okay with that, and only okay with that if they ended up getting thrown over the top rope by the eliminated person, that it was not considered an elimination. It makes no sense whatsoever that a person who was just eliminated can still really participate in the match and just start throwing people over the top rope, and that's considered legal eliminations. That, to me, is the biggest and worst offense when it comes to the Royal Rumble every single year that I have to overlook.
For sure. Yes, I'm right there with you. And I'm in the same boat because I love the Rumble. Besides WrestleMania, it's probably my favorite pay-per-view. So it's just one of those things that I try myself to overlook. But it's just, come on, it's just like those little things, those little tweaks. Like if you just make a set of rules, just lay everything out and have actual maybe common sense to some of the things, it would just clean up everything and just make it more, even more enjoyable than what it already is right now. But yeah, like we said, I'm stoked that Becky won. I think they finally made the right move in that aspect by having the person who everyone wants to win and not trying to do anything shady or any funny business or anything like that before WrestleMania, and you know, maybe have her lose and then have to face Charlotte and just anything crazy like that. So I'm happy they at least gave us that and didn't pull another Daniel Bryan, like I think it was like 2014 or 15 or whatever year it was, but...
Yes,
I give them credit in that aspect. They actually listened to the right way.
Nightmare years. I mean, when you had Rey Mysterio come out at number 30, and the crowd just absolutely tore Rey Mysterio apart because it was not. It was absolutely. I mean, but he was just a collateral damage at that point. I mean, how WWE misstepped on that one is still beyond me. I mean, I still can't watch that Rumble, and I still can't watch the Roman Reigns Rumble win with The Rock trying to save him, and even The Rock couldn't save him from being torn down in Philadelphia. I mean, it's just. It's some of the most infuriating booking by WWE in the last 5 years. But back to the women's match. I mean, as far as the Rumble match goes, like, look, I enjoyed it. Obviously, outside of Becky winning, which was the right and only result WWE could make, Casey Cannizzaro from the American Ninja Warrior champion, she was, I think, awesome.
Oh.
I really enjoyed watching her. She's athletic, but not in a typical pro wrestler way. She's taken her skills and really made them awesome to watch. And she just looks and feels different than all of the other competitors in that match. So Casey Cannizzaro, to me, was another standout from that match.
Oh, 100%. I'm so glad you brought her up. And to be honest, I'm ashamed of it now after seeing what she did last night. I wasn't too familiar with her. I watch NXT, but not nearly as much as I should. But seeing her last night, I was just so impressed. And it's just like, I fell in love with her as a character last night. She was so believable. And whereas some people are very athletic and can do all the high flying moves and acrobatic moves and whatever you want to call it, she actually makes it look believable. And she just has a flow with it to where it makes sense, where it's not just like a spot fest, but everything she does has a reason. And it was just amazing to watch. And I can't wait to see more from her in the future.
And she makes it look effortless. And like you said, it's not just she's very smooth. Like, she has awesome control of her body. It's not just like, oh, someone hit me and I'm going to oversell this. Like, she just looks, as you just said, look, I'm really excited for what she does in the future. I don't need to see her as women's champion right now, but, like, as long as they have a farm system, and WWE does, and Triple H has done an awesome job with NXT, and the women's division is more relevant than it's ever been in the history of pro wrestling, you have Casey and a number of others waiting in the wings, and that's what is awesome about wrestling. And I think for the first time, maybe ever, the women are – in terms of crowd reaction and in terms of relevance and what people are talking about, the women have overtaken the men. I mean, there's no question about it, I think. And that is a hell of a statement from a number of years ago when we had the Butterfly Divas division title and we had pillow fights and all of those eye rolling, you know, mud fights and all that stuff that even as a teenager, I remember watching that stuff. And that's when, I was like, oh, it's women fighting in bra and panties, but I'm like, I don't really care. Like, I don't watch that to watch that. I watch this to watch wrestling. Like, I don't know. It never really appealed to me, even in the time of the Attitude Era. So when you think about where they've come from and where they are now, it's remarkable, and I'm excited for the future.
Right on. Right there with you.
So the Daniel Bryan AJ Styles match, we kind of alluded to it a little bit, and I was a bit underwhelmed by this match. I don't think anybody really has high praise for this match, and it's a damn shame because both men are beyond talented. Both men are super over, and this match just seemed to fall flat. I mean, really, the only talking point outside of the match that I don't think it was terrible, but just was kind of like ho-hum, is Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan coming back and ended up breaking up the pin and landed a choke slam on Styles, and Bryan ended up getting the 1-2-3. So outside of the flat match that I think we all can just in unison say, what are your thoughts on Eric Rowan, out of all people, interfering in this match?
I, again, was shocked just because of I kind of envisioned Lars Sullivan to be in that position, and I understand he's dealing with some personal things, and that's totally fine, you know. And I don't know if he maybe was their plan originally or whatnot, but I'm intrigued. I'm oddly intrigued just with this whole new Daniel Bryan character. I feel he has a lot of steam behind him and momentum, and he's just great at pretty much any type of character, anything he needs to portray in general. So I'm interested to see where they go with this pairing, and just I can't wait until Tuesday to see how they play it out and what Daniel has to say, and if Eric speaks at all, or if Daniel is just going to be the mouthpiece for the both of them. But I was pleasantly shocked in a way. At first, I didn't really know what to make of it. Obviously, once he came out, we knew he was going to get involved in some fashion, and I assumed for Daniel. But I'm interested. In a weird way, I'm interested to see what they do with Eric, because I feel like him and Luke Harper have so much potential as big men, and not just a stereotypical like a Braun Strowman, just like a monster, because they can actually go in the ring. Maybe Luke Harper more so than Eric, but I'm totally interested in seeing where they go with this and just to see how it plays out and if it carries on to WrestleMania and after that.
Yeah, you know what? Like, at first I said Eric Rowan, because we're so conditioned to when we see Eric Rowan, I'm sorry, but we think irrelevance. I mean, yeah, he's part of the Wyatt family, he was part
right.
of the Bludgeon Brothers, but he's never really caught on. And so when he took on this role, you know, my initial knee-jerk reaction was like, what, him? But just the fact that he looked different, he looked like he was just in his normal clothes. He seems to fit mm-hmm. that outdoorsy, earthy, maybe even aligning with that whole vegan lifestyle, I'm sure he will, of Daniel Bryan being holier than thou because he's a vegan. And I love it. I love that whole persona. I'm digging that, because, you know, I think that that fits Daniel Bryan well in terms of not being an arrogant, you know, guy because he's vegan, but he's actually a vegan. We all know he is, and him taking
right.
it to the extreme. And anytime you're a heel, especially a newly turned heel, you need backup. You need that faction. You need people to take the hits for you while you scamper outside the ring and, you know, allow that person who's supporting you to get beat down. I mean, it just makes sense. So having Eric Rowan, I'm fine with it. I like it right now. I mean, it's only been one night since we saw it. There's a lot of work to do on the backside here, but I really am fine with it, especially given the fact that Eric Rowan has more or less been the irrelevant part of every team that he's been in since his debut. So I'm willing to give it a chance. Daniel Bryan needs that heel faction, and maybe he'll get even more members of his stable. Maybe he'll name it something along the lines of, you know, I don't know, some kind of vegan, I don't know, vegan supporting group.
Yeah, I kind of get the whole, in many aspects it's different, but kind of the same, like the whole, like if you flash back to CM Punk with the Straight Edge Society back in the day, I kind of hope they maybe go that route. And I feel like Daniel Bryan is the perfect person if they were going to pair Rowan up with someone for them to pair him up with, because Daniel is amazing on the mic, especially with this new character he's doing. I just feel like in an odd way they're the perfect pairing. And if they add maybe Luke in or whomever else, I just feel like it could possibly get better. But even if they don't, I feel like the two of them have so much potential, and Eric can just be that badass that Daniel needs, because Daniel shouldn't be fighting every week on SmackDown or anything like that. So maybe if Eric just comes out and does like his dirty work for him or anything like that, I just feel like they have so much potential with this, no matter what direction they take it in.
I'm willing to give this a chance. I mean, it is something new. I guess it's fresh, as WWE likes to now label everything, which they think
right.
just bringing in, by the way, they think bringing in new people is what will make things fresh. No, what will make things fresh is their approach to how they look at professional wrestling, and not these comedic, nonsensical, very scripted type of segments. And so, look, I'm all for this Eric Rowan so far. I think Daniel Bryan needed something else. He needed that support from other heel wrestlers. And I think Eric Rowan, who has been a heel almost his entire career, is a good fit, and he looked more natural. I was tired of seeing him in whatever gas mask or whatever sheet mask he was in for years and years and years. And the Bludgeon Brothers, I'm sorry, never really took off. It was kind of a offshoot of the Wyatt family, and they were labeled as dominant for a number of months, but it never seemed to really catch on. And I'm all for an Eric Rowan reboot, and this could very well be that that reboot for him. So a couple more matches here, and then we will close it out. And that is Finn Balor losing to Brock Lesnar, and losing, I think, more interestingly via submission. I think, personally, that this was a smart move on the part of WWE, where the Asuka Becky submission to me made no sense. This made sense to me because number one, it didn't feel like a Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar part two, because it was kind of that same dynamic of David and Goliath. And it wasn't F5s that took him down. It was a submission maneuver that many of us forgot that he really had in his arsenal. And it was surprising that he lost via submission. To me, this was a good surprise. I know that we all don't want Brock Lesnar as champion. He's an absentee champion. I get all that. And Finn has a lot of fans out there. I'm a Finn Balor fan, but I'm looking at the big picture here of who is going to take down Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. I mean, that's ultimately where WWE is headed. They're trying to make Brock seem as unbeatable as possible. And not only that, he has the F5, but they reminded and re-educated fans that, look, he's multidimensional. He can beat you via the F5, and he can beat you via submission. So I was surprised, but pleasantly surprised at how this match was booked.
Same. And I think, too, seeing how much Brock Lesnar sold for Finn, especially outside when he had the incident with the table, you know, in his midsection, all that, I was pleasantly surprised with the match and what Brock was willing to do with Finn. I did hear, which if it's true or not, that, you know, Brock chose Finn to be his opponent, and whether that's true or not, I feel like you can tell when Brock is engaged into an opponent, or if he's just phoning it in like he did with Dean Ambrose however many years ago. I feel like Brock was into the match, and that makes it believable. I think Brock, yes, he is an absentee champion and all that stuff, but I feel like when Brock is fully engaged in something, I feel like you can get a good match out of him, and I feel like that's what we got last night. Part of me going into it was thinking maybe they do pull a swerve and have Finn pull maybe an upset, if you want to call it that, victory against Brock, just because of how much they were hyping up the Do You Believe and just like the underdog story and how much smaller Finn is compared to Brock. So I was thinking maybe they pull like a quick swerve and an upset because they still have about 2 months or so before WrestleMania. Maybe Finn wins and then they fight at the Elimination Chamber and Finn loses it there or whatnot. So part of me was thinking, man, maybe they do pull this out. But I figured first, if the Demon Finn Balor isn't going to come out, then it's probably less likely. And I kind of agree with the fact that they didn't have the Demon come out, because I maybe would have needed more build up to the match against Brock, maybe if they had like an extra month or something and took that route. But I was pleasantly surprised with the match, and I was for it. I think the outcome was right, and I'm just happy with the way Brock handled the match, and I'm excited to see Brock versus Seth. Honestly, and I feel like, knowing that that's most likely the match that we're going to get at WrestleMania, I feel like a competitor like Finn Balor, which is very similar in stature to a Seth Rollins, like size and build and all that, I feel like it was a good little warm-up match to the WrestleMania main event that we're going to get between the two.
As you just said, I mean, it's funny when you said that. I never really thought about that. But as far as Brock, when he cares about a match and when he doesn't, it's very obvious. And it's not just because of the way the match is booked, but you can just – Brock just – he's very easy to read when he cares and doesn't care about something. And in this case, I think he did. And as you just said, he sold the hell out of Finn Balor, as he should have. I mean, Finn Balor, who was the first Universal Champion, ended up obviously having to drop out because of injury, and never really got that one-on-one rematch that we've all been looking for since that injury. And he finally gets it, and it's against Brock. And I think most people believe Brock was going to go over, and he did. But there was still that part of me that believed, well, why couldn't Finn win this? I mean, Brock is at the point in his WWE run where I think fans are at the point of, okay, well, you're never really here. And when you're here, you stand there while Paul cuts a promo and, you know, you circle the ring and you give people smirks and smiles or whatever. You act like you don't want to be here because you really don't want to be here. And so I think fans are getting a little bit exhausted of the Brock Lesnar act. Even when he's there on a semi-regular basis, it's getting old. And so having Finn take the championship there may not have been the worst move in the world. I'm sure it was discussed. But it's, I mean, to me, it's Seth Rollins and it's Brock Lesnar. And having Seth Rollins finally conquer Brock Lesnar, which I know that we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves of the main event of WrestleMania, but I don't know how there's any other option other than Seth Rollins beating Brock Lesnar. I know that they have faced each other in the past when Seth Rollins was a heel and you had the Authority actually bring in Brock Lesnar to face Seth Rollins. And it's, you know, people forget that, but they have faced each other before, albeit a number of years ago. And now you have a, you know, reinvented Seth Rollins. He's got, you know, the babyface reaction that WWE is looking for. He's arguably the hottest heel on the male side on Raw. And to me, I don't know how they don't have Seth Rollins go over at WrestleMania, but that's months down the line. Anyway, I think that Finn and Brock was, I think, a better match than Daniel Bryan and Brock was. You had a couple believable near falls. You know, when he was driving Brock Lesnar into the corner of the announce table, that looked brutal. You could almost feel that. And the announcer sold it great. Brock sold that great. And to have that be a strategy of Finn's to attack the midsection was a good strategy because Brock was unable to deliver offense because of his injury in his midsection and his core. So I think that was a good story to tell. I don't think anybody's taken that approach yet. And so I don't think Finn was hurt by this at all. I really don't. Unlike Becky tapping out, I think Finn tapping out here did not hurt Finn Balor. I think it actually elevated him in a loss, which is ultimately what you're trying to do for both competitors in the match. So overall, I don't think it was an A-plus match, B-plus, maybe even an A-minus as far as that goes. And I know people are pissed off about the booking, but we got to remember the big picture here, and that is WrestleMania.
For sure, for sure. And I think it sets up perfectly for the Brock and Rollins match. So I'm just, like I said, just Finn and Seth being so comparable in many aspects, I feel like that was the perfect warm-up match for Brock and for us to see that he is vulnerable. So someone like Seth, if and when he does beat Brock, it's more believable for all of us in unison and not just like, Brock needed to lose the championship so he can either take off or whatever happens after WrestleMania. But I feel like it just sets up, it's one more peg in Seth Rollins' journey to defeating Brock Lesnar.
Exactly. And I think that could be a hell of a match as well. And they could even go back to when Seth cashed in at WrestleMania 31 and ended up, you know, hitting the curb stop on Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns and ended up capturing and spoiling that main event, cashing in the Money in the Bank. I mean, you could pull all the way from 4 years ago and maybe they will. I think that there is a story there that they should and hopefully will pull from. And I think I'd expect that to be Brock Lesnar's last match in WWE for quite some time. I've been wrong before on this. I mean, we keep expecting Brock to just hightail it off the UFC and, you know, we'll see you later. But I mean, he keeps popping back up and I don't know if that's Vince McMahon who's just salivating at the mouth for star power, or maybe even Brock is saying, hey, I'm not ready for UFC yet. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know Brock Lesnar's contract, but I think in most cases, contracts run through WrestleMania to WrestleMania. And I think this could be Brock's last match when he drops the belt to Seth for quite some time. And that's fine. I think that we need time away from Brock Lesnar as well. So let's get into the men's Royal Rumble match, the last match here. Got a few minutes left. Expected Seth Rollins to win this too. And again, predictability, not a bad thing here. I think it was a solid match. Without its flaws, of course, and I'll just give my piece on the flaws and I will toss it to you for your reaction. Now, I will say that No Way Jose, I watched him in NXT. He was never a guy that you took really seriously. I mean, he was the guy that he was kind of entertainment. He was very unique looking, you know, his hair is cool, right? He's got the connection with the fans, all that. I get it. But then you bring him in here for basically Adam Rose 2.0, and he comes out there mm-hmm. with the Rosebuds or the conga line or whatever nonsense you want to label it as. And then he gets in the ring and instantly gets eliminated. I don't know if he broke Santino Marella's record. I don't think he did. They would have announced it. And he immediately gets eliminated by Samoa Joe. And then he just continues the conga line like he just didn't care about losing the biggest opportunity of his life. And I know it's – I don't know if it's Vince McMahon trying to give a little bit of comedic relief. But you can't do that in the middle of a match that is has so much on the line and a guy that's supposed to be presented as a professional athlete not care of the fact that he was not only eliminated, but eliminated in an embarrassing fashion and then continuing to just conga line it up the ramp. It was – to me, that was flaw number one. Number two, this whole Nia Jax thing, and I don't understand the purpose of this. I've been trying to rack my brain around what exactly was booking and management thinking when inserting Nia Jax into this, not even getting into the fact of it makes absolutely zero sense for any female to ever enter or male to enter a female contest. Either way, it makes no sense from any perspective, even in a fantasy environment, makes no sense. And they're a PG environment. And so all of a sudden WWE just is now allowing male on female violence and all that stuff. Granted, I guess it was warranted because she inserted herself in the match, and how she got in there to begin with is just infuriating to begin with. I don't understand this. She ends up actually dominating some of the men, which is even more crazy to me. That, I mean, look, I'm not a sexist at all, but there's just, to me, when you are dominating, you dominated Rey Mysterio. You evaded an RKO at first. You come in there. I don't understand the purpose of this. Even if she had won, I mean, what are you gonna, so you, Nia wins the men's Royal Rumble match. So what are you going to have her face Brock Lesnar? I don't understand this. Was this supposed to be, well, Nia's a tough female that can compete even with the men in the WWE. What did this accomplish? I don't understand this at all. So I'm going to leave it at that before I go on a 20-minute rant, and I'm going to toss this to you.
No, I, again, agree with you 100%. I'm going to start with No Way Jose really quick. I agree with you. The thing that, I guess, infuriated me the most was his lack of care with being eliminated. Yes, 29 people have to be eliminated. We get that. That's fine. That's the whole purpose of the Rumble match. But for you not to care at all, then why are you in professional wrestling? What is your goal? Your goal should be to eventually main event WrestleMania to become the champion or to even have a title shot. And if you get eliminated in a matter of mere seconds and you don't care, that I could see whatever you do, your little conga dance down the aisle, whatever, that's fine, whatever. But with how quickly you get eliminated and you have no care about it and you just try to dance your way back to the back, like, really? Like, I just feel like it's obvious, first of all, that they don't take his character seriously, which is fine, but what's the point? Everyone who's in that Rumble match should have the number one goal in mind to win to main event WrestleMania. That's the whole purpose. That's the whole reason you're supposed to work your ass off the entire year up until even the Royal Rumble. If you don't have that for sure, if you're not the champion, if you don't have a for sure avenue to possibly win the Rumble and then start your own personal road to WrestleMania. And for him not to care is just absurd to me. And I don't really care what kind of character you have. At the end of the day, that should be your number one focus. And if you can just get eliminated so easily and not have any care in the world about it, let's just scrap him. Let's just move on to someone else with him. Like, don't even bother putting him in the Rumble. It's not funny. Like, I guess I kind of understand what they were trying to do. Like, you know, give us that brief break or whatever, like a Santino-esque moment. But even with Santino, like, it's, to me personally, it's not cute and it's not entertaining. It's, wow, he's not taking it seriously, so why should I ever take his character seriously for any title he were to chase after this point? So that's my take on No Way Jose. The Nia Jax thing was just really confusing to me. I honestly didn't expect R-Truth to enter the match at all, so I kind of figured there was going to be some type of foolery going on with him. Never in a million years did I guess it would be a woman to take him out and replace him, let alone Nia Jax, which I guess if it's going to be a female, Nia makes the most sense. But The only part of me that could maybe understand it and excuse it was if this was 5-6 years ago and we didn't have a women's Royal Rumble match. Whereas Chyna entered and Beth Phoenix, that was maybe not 100% acceptable, but it kind of made more sense if you want to create this badass female character to show that she had the gumption and she was even willing to get into the ring to compete with the men to have her own chance at WrestleMania. But now that we have a women's Royal Rumble match, there's no need for that at this point. And like you said, there's no reason for a male to enter the female's Royal Rumble and vice versa. I think at this point it's just, it did too much harm than good. And I believe, didn't she eliminate Mustafa Ali in this match?
Yes. She did.
So that is just absurd to me. I was so impressed with Mustafa. I love him, and I can't wait to see how they build his character going forward. I feel like he has so much potential. And he's one of those guys and one of those wrestlers that you just know loves this business and is willing to do anything that he needs to become the best in whatever title he's pursuing and to get to that main event spot. And to have him eliminated by Nia Jax was just, like, really? Like, it was just so unnecessary. And at first I was kind of concerned that, man, they're going to have her enter this match and then none of the guys are going to fight her because she's a female. You know, and obviously me being a female, I feel like if you put yourself in a situation, like, you need to be willing to accept whatever's going to happen because you put yourself in that spot. Literally, she took out R-Truth and entered the match with all men. So, again, I don't understand the mindset behind it. It was just really unnecessary to me. I'm happy she got the RKO. She should have never got as much offense in on Rey Mysterio as she did, because not to be mean or anything, but just seeing the size difference between the two, like, we don't need to see that. We obviously know Rey is one of the smaller competitors, but Rey is just amazing at what he does. Like, that it never really sticks out. Like, there's always a David and Goliath aspect with Rey, depending on who he's fighting against, just because he is a naturally smaller wrestler. However, it never stands out. And just for me personally, just seeing Nia just pick Rey up on her shoulders like she did, it was just really demeaning for Rey, and it was just completely unnecessary, and they didn't need to go that route.
I don't know what this was supposed to accomplish. I don't understand this is the objective, guys. Nia's going to come out. She's going to get involved in the men's match, and no one's going to say anything because it's the men's match. That's okay. That's a woman coming in, but we're going to overlook that. And she's going to come in and she's going to toss Rey around and eliminate Mustafa Ali. And then, you know, eventually she'll get the 619, a super kick and an RKO. I mean, what does this do? What purpose does this serve? I mean, it's almost like a flashback to when, you know, they actually had man on woman violence in WWE, and, you know, when they had TV-14, and obviously it was much more brutal back then, and there was much more, you know, sex, swearing, all that stuff. But this is a PG environment where they have all these sponsors that are so concerned about the product WWE is putting on TV, and they have this. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where this came from. We haven't seen this man and woman violence, albeit it was justified because Nia put herself in that position, since really they changed to TV-PG. I don't know the last time that this actually happened. Typically it's been, you know, if there is any violence, it's female on male, and it's usually, oh, I'm going to, you know, slap you and then hide behind my husband or my manager or whoever I'm supporting. Or, you know, there's always that, but then the men never retaliate. They just stand there and just give a mean face. I mean, so I figured that this one, we would never see anything like this again. So I don't know where this came from or whatever Vince McMahon was. I don't get this at all. As you just said, I popped when I saw her finally get the RKO. Like, I think all the entire audience did too. I mean, live in Phoenix. And so I don't know. I don't, was this to get Nia over as competing? I don't know. I really don't know. And the more I think about it, the more I get infuriated. And the fact that she actually eliminated somebody is what really gets me. And Mustafa Ali, who has been lighting it up lately, especially, you know, he's got this program with Samoa Joe going on. He eliminated Samoa Joe. So I don't know. It was the most random thing I've seen in the Rumble in a long time. It was very cool to see Jeff Jarrett, though. I did not expect to see Jeff Jarrett.
No, yeah.
Obviously, with Elias out there. And so Elias somewhat turning back to heel, attacking Jeff Jarrett, which was kind of surprising. But all right, well, I don't mean to cut you off. We are running a little bit out of time here. But Ashley, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for coming on. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to the next few months as we really ramp up WrestleMania season. And we've got a couple pay-per-views, obviously, in between now and then. So we will definitely have to reconnect between now and then, and we'll have to have you back on.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a blast. But, yeah, thank you so much, and keep up the great work.
Thanks a lot. And before you go, though, let everyone know how they can follow you.
Oh, yeah. So I still haven't changed my Twitter handle. That's going to be one of my resolutions for 2019, I promise. So it's the number 4SH73Y. And I promise if I'm ever back on your show, I will change it to something more 2019-ish. So we'll
all right.
See.
So you heard it here first. It's breaking news that Ashley is going to be changing and updating her Twitter handle to something a little bit more modern, as you say,
yes.
up to date. So awesome. Well, we'll be looking forward to that, and we'll be looking forward to having you back on the show in the near future.
Yes, sir. Sounds great. Thank you so much again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you. Take care.
You too.
All right, bye. All right, well, that was Ashley. And guys, thank you for listening to the show. It's been a blast. And as always, follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast, and also on Patreon at patreon.com/WWE Podcast if you want to add free version of this and all my shows with exclusive shows as well. So guys, thank you for joining me. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.
So long, 2018. Hello, 2019. And hello to taking charge of your future with a degree from Post University. At Post University, every online program we offer has a number of concentrations and electives that let you customize your education to your career goals. It's just one more way Post makes it personal. Whether finishing your degree or starting something new, learn more at post.edu or text degree to 474747. Your new life starts now.
Car category names like sports car or subcompact sound so one-dimensional, and great cars just aren't, like the restyled Honda Civic. So I named a new category, Spayflu. That's SP for sporty, thanks to an available turbocharged engine. The AFE is for standard safety and driver-assistive features, like Honda Sensing, and the LU is for value. Test drive the Honda Civic today.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow, that's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5.